So, because it's also my mother's yahrzeit, it's her fifth yahrzeit. Today is the yahrzeit itself. So, and the neshama and I'll speak more about her at the end and try to connect the ideas to my mother, Aleha Shalom, also. What I wanted is to look at. I saw a piece over here in one of my svarim, which is really very beautiful and also very, very important as well. And he's discussing, this is the Sefer Yerach Lemoadim by Rabbi Olshan from Lakewood. And he's discussing over here the something which, doesn't always get given the biggest spotlight in terms of the say that's more of a cute thing. Nothing is cute. To say those words is, God forbid, nothing is cute in the Seder, nothing is cute in Judaism. But to many people, to the outside observer, when they look at these things, oh, that's nice. So an example of this is the mnemonic, the actual mnemonic of the 10 plagues. At the end of the Haggadah, so we go through the 10 plagues, we put our fingers in the wine, we dip it onto the plate, and we say each of the 10 plagues independently. And then at the end it says, Rabbi Yehuda, Hayanosim Behem Simonim, Rabbi Yehuda would give Simonim, would give a mnemonic to remember what the 10 plagues are. And what is the mnemonic? Datzach Adash Ba'achav. So when you look at those letters, Datzach, Dalet for dam, blood, Tzadi for Sephardeia, frogs, and so on and so forth. You go through the whole thing. So that's the acronym. So when you read that, you say, okay, it's a cute way. It's a clever way to remember the 10 plagues. It has a certain ring to it. Datzach Adash Ba'achav. So that is the that's how a person superficially, naively would understand it. But the truth is, it's rooted in a medrash. It's a medrash Shmos Rabbah, and the medrash is talking about the pasuk which expresses what Hashem said to Moshe when he was instructing Moshe to leave the snare, the burning bush, and to go to Mitzrayim and to perform all of the agency and the mission that he had to fulfill in Mitzrayim. And the pasuk says, Yoma Hashem al Moshe Balachtocha. Hashem said to Moshe, when you go back, when you return to Mitzrayim, when you go back to Mitzrayim, Losha Mitzrayim, Re'ei Kol HaMosim, see all of the wonders, Asher Santi B'yodocha, that I put in your hand, Va'asisum Lifnei Paro, perform them before Pharaoh, Va'ani Chazek Aslibo, but I'm going to harden his heart, and he's not going to send the Jewish people out. But see the signs in your hand and perform these signs before Pharaoh in Mitzrayim. Now, what signs is he referring to? And that's the Medrash's question. What is the sign he's referring to? Now, at the burning bush, he'd already received three signs. He's had three signs. He was told to put the stick, throw the staff onto the ground, and it turned into a snake. He was told to put his hand into his chest, pulls it out, it has leprosy all over it. Now, what it says over there in that parasha is that Hashem was telling Moshe, perform these signs before the Jewish people to prove your authenticity, to prove your authenticity that you are a true leader. Do these signs, and that will prove your mission that I sent you. And the third sign is, if they don't listen to you on the first two signs, then take some of the water from the Nile and cast it down onto the ground, and it's going to turn into blood. But those three signs were not being told to Moshe to perform before Paro. It was to prove his authenticity before the Jewish people. So the Medrash says it can't be referring to those signs. It can't be those signs that Hashem is now telling Moshe to perform before Paro. Because the Medrash says he never performed those signs to Paro. The truth is, he did, as we know from the story, he did throw down the stick on the ground and it turned into a snake. But that wasn't as a result of this instruction over here. That was a result of a different instruction that Hashem gave to Moshe and Aaron together when they would go into the court of Paro. That they should both do this miracle of throwing the stick onto the ground, it'll turn into a snake. But in terms of these three over here, these were never designed to be given to Paro, but only to the Jewish people. So what sign is it referring to? So Medrash says, Ella, what does it mean, the signs that I put into your hand? Listen to this. Zehamata. This is the staff. Shahir Kesuvim Olav, that had written on it, on the staff, the famous staff of Moshe, which is a story unto itself. A story, a medrash, and midrashim goes back, it's a whole major exit ramp off the highway. We can go into another world for hours and hours to discuss what this staff is, but it goes back to the beginning of time, beginning of the creation. So not for now. But this staff which he had was a very special staff. On the staff, Medrash says, was written on it the 10 plagues. The 10 plagues were engraved upon the staff of Moshe. How were they engraved on the staff of Moshe? I'll give you three guesses. They weren't spelled out completely. They were engraved on the staff of Moshe in the form of the mnemonic, Datsach Adash Ba'achav. So those letters, that's where those letters come from. Or that's where this mnemonic comes from. It comes from Moshe's stick. Hashem said, those signs in your hand, namely the 10 plagues, which are written down as a mnemonic engraved on your stick, that's what you have to do before Paro in Mitzrayim. They're the signs. Amalek Kodesh Baruch Hu Eila Makas, these are the plagues, Hashem Santi Biyotov, which I put it literally inside your hand on the staff. Aseo Sam, perform them, Lifnei Paro, before Paro, Al Yedei Matazeh, through the stick. So that's where it comes from. So at least we understand the origin of the acronym. It's not, wasn't pulled out of the hat from nowhere. It wasn't just a cute thing that Rabbi Yehuda came up with, but it's based upon this Medrash. So it obviously lends a little bit more appreciation or understanding to it, or it points to a certain deeper idea. So the fact that they are divided this way, and there's three of them, there are three sets, three, three, and four. So what is the significance? Now we've seen now that they're not random things, not just a mnemonic, but it really has a lot of root in a very basic idea that these are the plagues, these are what's written on the staff. So what exactly is going on? So here's a good question you can ask people at the Seder. Got to have riddles, good questions, things to arouse curiosity. So the question is how is Hashem like an apple? How is Hashem like an apple? Now, you know, that sounds also sacrilegious, but it's actually based upon a Zohar and the Vilna Gaon, based upon the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Now, we spoke about this Pasuk a few weeks ago. The Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, is the Ketapuach Ba'atzei Hayah, like an apple tree in the forest. Now, we interpreted, and there are different interpretations of this Pasuk, we interpreted this to refer to the Jewish people, that the Jewish people are compared to the apple, and that's what the Gemara says is the basis for putting the apple in the Charoses, because of this Pasuk, right? And the Medrash says that the Jewish women gave birth under apple trees in Mitzrayim, although there's a machlokas exactly, is a tapuach an apple tree, maybe it's an estro tree, different discussion. But there's another understanding of this Pasuk that is not referring to the Jewish people, but it's referring to Hashem. Ketapuach ba'atzei hayah, that it's compared to Hashem. So the Vilna Gaon writes, he says, mashadima osad l'tapuach, this that the Pasuk compares the apple to Hashem is based upon the Zohar. The Zohar Kodesh says that the tapuach, the apple, has three colors. Did we discuss this before? We haven't discussed it, no? The three colors of the apple? No? Okay. I'm just having deja vu. Okay. The apple has three colors. There are three colors to the apple. Yesh sholosh gevanim. Now, how do apples have three colors? So some will say there are three different colors of the skin. There's yellow, there's red, there's green. Someone said to me, no, because the three colors in the actual apple itself, because there's the brown seeds, the black seeds, the white flesh, and then the skin, the color of the skin of the apple. So there's three colors. But either way, however, the apple has three colors. This is from the Zohar. The apple has three colors. V'chein hu b'kodesh baruch hu. Hashem also has three colors, so to speak. Now, a color is an appearance. A color is a manifestation. A color is how we perceive something. So it doesn't mean Hashem has colors, but he has three manifestations. He has three ways with which he appears to us in the world. Based upon, he says, the verse in Yeshaya, which basically captures three, what I call God principles, the three God principles, right? So what are the three God principles with this verse in Yeshaya says? Leman teida ki ani Hashem. To know that I am Hashem, that's the first God principle number one, that I am Hashem. Number two, ki ani Hashem bekerev haaretz. Now these verses are taken from the Torah itself, but he's mapping it, these verses, also to this verse in Isaiah. Essentially saying that there are three major principles, three manifestations, three quote-unquote colors of Hashem, based upon the psukim in the story of the Exodus. Number one, I am Hashem. God's existence, the plain existence of Hashem, that I am Hashem in the world. Number two, Ki ani Hashem Elokeinu bekerav haaretz. I am Hashem, your God, in the land. That's God principle number two. I'll explain in a second. And the third one is Ki ein kamoni. There's no one like me. There is no one like me whatsoever. The three God principles. Number one, I exist. I am there with you in the land. And this is all about Hashgacha Pratis, divine providence, because being in the land, being Bekerav Aretz, means that he's here. He's not up there in Himmel, in the heaven, distant and separated from the affairs of mankind. That's antithetical to what we believe about Hashem. Hashem exists. He created the universe. Plus, he's here down, Bekerav Aretz, he's here in the world as well. And the third God principle is Ein Kamoni. There's no power like me. There is no power in the entire universe like a Kodesh Baruch Hu. These are the three colors of Hashem. And that's why in this Pasuk in Shir Hashem, Hashem is compared to the apple, the three colors. The apple, the three manifestations, the three primary principles of Hashem in the world. So that's what the Vilna Gaon says. And now we're getting a little bit of a picture, perhaps, of what the three sets of plagues are all about, the Tetzach, Adash, Ba'achav. Because, in fact, those three God principles correspond precisely and exactly to those three sets of plagues. Tatzach, Adash, Ba'achav. The first three plagues, the blood, the frogs, and the kinim, the lice, correspond to the first God principle. How do we know this? The Malbim commentator, famous commentator, explains. He says, each of the three sets of plagues correspond and map perfectly to exactly what the Vilna Gaon said about these three God principles. Why? How do we know that? Because if you look at those verses in the Chumash about those three God principles, number one, I am Hashem, that verse is said with respect to the first three plagues. I am Hashem, my existence. In other words, the first three plagues were designed in order to demonstrate the existence of Hashem. All the plagues in general, all together, collectively demonstrate Hashem's existence. But there are different dimensions of Hashem's existence. There are different colors of Hashem. I am Hashem, I created this universe, I'm here in the world as well, I'm involved in your life, I'm not a distant being, there's no power like me. Each of the three sets of plagues have a particular target towards that goal. How so specifically, we're not going to go into, but the Malbim says that the first three plagues, the verse or the principle which is expressed with the first three plagues is God's existence. In order that I'm bringing these plagues upon you, in order that you shall know that I exist. I'm here. Now, what's interesting is this. If you paid attention to the verses and gone through these parashiyos carefully of the 10 plays, a very, very strange thing will be realized. And what that is, that with the first two plagues of the 10, Moshe gives a warning to Paro and tells him, if you don't send the Jewish people out, the blood's going to come. The frogs are going to come. With the third plague of the lice, there's no warning given to Paro. And then similarly with the second set of three plagues, with the wild beasts and the pestilence and the boils, the first two are introduced with a warning to Paro. Moshe goes into Paro and says, "If you don't send this out, then this is going to happen." The third plague, no warning. And similarly with the last three plagues. The tenth one we'll come to later on. The tenth one is out of the regular system, but the third set of three, also the first two of that set, is also introduced with a warning. Moshe goes to Paro and he says, if you don't do this, this is what's going to happen. The third one does not have a warning. And that's the pattern with all of the three sets of plagues. First two, a warning. Last one, no warning. What's going on? The Malbim says, because if the plagues are all coming to testify to Hashem's existence with respect to the three God principles, I forgot to mention that again, the second God principle is that I'm involved in the world. I'm down here in the world. That verse is said with respect to the second set of plagues. And the third God principle, that there's no power like me. I'm the most powerful being in the entire universe. That's said with respect to the last set of plagues. Those three God principles are all introduced with warnings. With warnings for the first two, but not for the last one. Why is that? Because if the plagues are coming as testimony to different God's principles, they're all coming to testify that Hashem exists, He's powerful, etc., etc., then what's the rule with witnesses? What's the rule with witnesses when witnesses come to testify? A, there has to be two witnesses. In Jewish law, you need to have two witnesses. And B, you have to give a warning beforehand. As long as two witnesses see the act being committed and they give the person a warning beforehand, now they can indict him. Right? That's the rule of witnesses in a regular civil case. If two witnesses are about to see someone commit a crime, they go over to him and they say, listen, if you do X, Y, or Z, you're going to be pulled, we're going to take you to best and you're going to be punished. Without the warning, they can't do that. So what's happening here? These plagues are witnesses. They are serving as witnesses. The first set of plagues, two witnesses, warning to Paro. If you don't send the Jewish people out, these plagues are going to come. And then the third plague, there's no warning because the third plague serves as the punishment. The third plague in every set serves as the punishment for failing to take heed to the warnings of the first two plagues. And that's the pattern of these 10 plagues. Again, the three sets of three, each set of three coming to demonstrate a different God principle on the basis of a warning to Paro. And since he didn't listen to the warning, he gets smacked. Now, obviously the plagues, each one is a smack as well. But what he's saying is that the third of each set is particularly a smack in the face. It's particularly a punishment. The first two were the warnings, and the third one is the real patch and the real punishment and the design and the disgrace to Paro. But the principle in general, the general overarching idea of all of the three sets are all teaching the three major God principles. And we can't emphasize this enough. Has to be etched into our brains, into our hearts, into our actions. These principles, God exists, Hashem is here in the world, he's involved in our lives, and there is no power like him. Whatever's going on, whatever's happening in the world. Well, I was discussing this with someone a few weeks ago, right? 36 hours after the whole thing with the tariffs, right? And he was telling me how catastrophic it is, etc. Not getting into politics, that's not my way. But I was saying to him, I said, you know, all of these things, you think that has more power than Hashem? Hashem has the power. It's Hashem controlling everything. Now, why things happen the way they do, different discussion. But it's so axiomatic and so essential that we get it etched into our minds and our hearts. He is the power behind everything. Ein kamoni, there is no power like me. Don't believe, don't put your investments and your trust and your belief and your security in all of these sub powers. They are agents and we have to engage in them, we have to use them. Of course, we have to do that, we have to engage in the normal channels. But Hashem is the true power. These are the principles which we're learning. Pesach, as I said so many times before, this is the Yom Tov for hammering home and inculcating into our psyche these major principles. So this is what the Malbim says about these three sets of plagues. So now we understand now why Hashem told Moshe, take these plagues, or the plagues which are etched into your staff, the three sets representing the three major God principles, perform them to Paro. Now you may wonder, someone asked me this question when I was sharing this the other day. They said, is it only for Paro? Is this only for Paro, not for the Jewish people? I mean, Paro doesn't exist anymore. The Egyptians don't exist. So why is this only for Paro? The answer is it's for both of us. As the beginning of Parshas Bo says, where it's all discussed, all the plagues. So the beginning of Parshas Bo says, Yom Hashem Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Bo al Paro, go to Paro, come to Paro, ki ani hechbadati et libo, I've hardened his heart, and I've hardened his heart with respect to the plagues, and they're going to come to him, leman shisi asosai ela bekriba, in order that I should present these signs in his midst. That's number one, that he should experience these plagues as punishment. But also, leman tesabe ba'azli binucha ben binucha, in order to tell your children, your children's children, to tell them, this that I punished Paro, I made light of him, and I gave him his due reward or due punishment, and I put these signs among the Egyptians, that they should know that I am Hashem. It has a dual purpose. It's to punish. Now, we have to see this with Paro. We have to see this with the Egyptians. It's important for us, because if there's no schar and onesh, there's no reward and punishment, then what happens to our belief system? We've got to see, we have to see, this is a very, very important lesson for us, to see the destruction of Mitzrayim, to understand the idea of reward and punishment. But as we've noticed so many times with all of this, that these are the source, this is all the source of our beliefs. I want to read to you the article comment over here, that this parasha, these parashas, and tomorrow night, the Haggadah, Pesach, has become the textbook lesson for humanity that God is not an aloof creator, but the master of the universe, day by day and event by event. This verse encapsulates that concept, for it tells Israel that the miracles of the Exodus were to teach them for all generations that God can toy with the most powerful of kingdoms, and this creates the perception that he is Hashem, the name that denotes his eternity, because his letters, here the Pasuk is using the word Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, its letters compromise the words Ha-Yehovia, he was, is, and will be. But this is the textbook of our belief. This is the textbook of our belief. And that's why Hashem told Moshe, you know, do those signs on the staff, which represent my three major principles that the Jewish people have to understand really, really well. And just a beautiful understanding and a way to explain it. So now, when we read this acronym tomorrow night, we're not going to take it lightly. We're going to really absorb it. We're going to say, ah, and anyone who's, you know, hopefully been listening will say, you know what Datsach represents? Datsach represents God exists. You know what Adash represents? That represents that Hashem's involved in our lives. Ba'achav, that represents there's no power like a Kadosh Baruch Hu. These are the three God principles, like the three colors of an apple for in Shir HaShirim. The Pasuk compares Hashem to an apple, the three colors of an apple, the three manifestations of Hashem. But that only takes care of the first nine plagues. What about the 10th one? Where does the 10th one come in? See, the 10th one, and there was no warning. I mean, there was a warning, I'm sorry, but there was no, but there he eventually sends the people out. So the Malbim explains that the 10th plague did not have the purpose of punishing and publicizing the miracles of Hashem. The purpose of the 10th plague was to activate, to press the button for the exit of the Jewish people, right? That's the 10th plague, because it was with the 10th plague, Makkos Bechoros, that was pressing the button for the exit of the Jewish people when they finally left Mitzrayim. So that doesn't fit into the rest of the system. That's the purpose of the 10th plague, to allow them to activate them to leave Mitzrayim. But what was the merit? Or what was the trigger? What was the trigger for the 10th plague itself? What was the trigger of the 10th plague? So the 10th plague, actually before I want to say, just want to say one thing over here that I saw, I mentioned this on Wednesday, just with regard to the 10th plague. Just, it's a beautiful idea. Again, these are nuggets of wisdom by themselves, just these ideas. I heard this from a shir by Elimelech Biederman, that we call Pesach, Pesach, because of what? Because the word Pesach means to skip over, because Hashem skipped over the houses of the Jewish people to smite the Egyptian firstborn with the plague of the firstborn, right? Everyone knows that. That's something which the average person knows. Pesach, because he distinguished the Jewish people from the rest of the Egyptians to strike them with the Makkos Bechoros. So, fine. However, when you reflect back upon the other plagues, was this the first time that Hashem skipped over the Jewish people and distinguished the Jewish people from the rest of the Egyptians? No. With the blood, the very first plague, Medrash says that as the Mitzri was drinking blood, as a Jew was drinking water from whatever container, the same container was producing blood for the Mitzri, for the Egyptian. Everything was just completely 180 degrees different for the Jewish people. Every plague did not affect the Jewish people. They were not, the Choshech, the darkness, they weren't affected by the darkness. So all the plagues also had that characteristic of Pesach. Pesach, Hashem skipped over and didn't strike the Jewish people with that plague. So why is Makkos Bechoros particularly picked out as the one which really illustrates that distinction and the fact that Hashem skipped over and didn't strike the Jewish firstborn? Why not the other plagues? So the Maharal says, he's a beautiful idea, that the way that Hashem performed the other plagues, the Medrash says, we say this in the Haggadah too, the way that the other plagues were executed were through an agency, through an angel. The difference with the last plague, we say in the Haggadah, it was me and not a Sarav. It was me, not a Malach. It was me and not an agent. Hashem did the Makkos Bechoros all by himself, just by much more direct intervention. With the other nine plagues, they were performed by an angel. They were assigned to an angel to them. So one could say, says the Maharal, that when the angel performs the other plagues, in order to save the Jewish people, it's very simple. Because as the Malach descends down to strike the Egyptians, he can take the Jewish people and lift them higher than himself, because the Jewish people can now become higher than the angel and be unaffected by those plagues. when Hashem performs the plague, you can't do that. You're not going to take the Jewish people and lift them higher than himself. The answer is that what can be done is the Jewish people can be elevated to be on the same level as Hashem. And therefore, the 10th plague, it wasn't done through an angel, it was done by Hashem, but the way to save them was by lifting them up and putting them on the same level as Hashem himself. And it's such a beautiful idea to appreciate again what's being experienced by Yetzias Mitzrayim, what's being experienced on the Seder night, to meditate on this idea. On the night of the Seder, spiritually, we are being elevated to be completely synchronistic with Hashem, to be on the same level as Hashem. That's what saved us from the Bakkas Bechoros. And that's why Pesach is named after that plague, because it really speaks and really articulates this oneness, the unity with Hashem, with the 10th plague. It's a beautiful idea. But what was the zechus? What was the merit for them to have this 10th plague? When I say the merit for them, the Jewish people, what was the merit? This didn't come out of nowhere, right? The 10th plague didn't come out of nowhere, and it didn't activate the Exodus out of nowhere. What was the zechus? What was the merit? The Korban Pesach, the Pesach offering. The Pesach, only with the Pesach offering did the Jewish people merit to leave Mitzrayim. And that was the trigger for being saved by Makkas Bechoros, because only those Jews who put the blood of the Pesach offering on their doorposts, they merited to have that skipping over. But if you didn't do the Korban Pesach, if you didn't perform the Korban Pesach, you wouldn't merit to leave Mitzrayim. So the whole Yetzias Mitzrayim is all based upon the Korban Pesach, the Pesach offering, also the Medrash, they did Bris Milah as well, but let's just focus on the Pesach offering. The Pesach offering was the major merit which allowed the Jewish people to be skipped over and to leave Mitzrayim. The Pesach offering, that's a major part. Someone said, actually, Reuven, Sharon, your husband, and Suzanne, your son, and Phyllis, your son-in-law, Suzanne was here before, right? That he was telling me, yes, like the Seder, we're missing a major thing in the Seder. We are missing the Pesach offering. We're missing the Pesach offering. This is a major, major, major ingredient. So we're compromised, we're stifled, we are handicapped by not having the Pesach offering without the Beis HaMikdash. The Pesach offering was the key to everything. And that was in the zechus of bringing the Pesach offering, we merited to leave Mitzrayim. That was the mitzvah. So this is also particularly good. We're talking about this now. Why? Because tomorrow is Shabbos HaGadol. Tomorrow is the great Shabbos. The Shabbos prior to Pesach is called Shabbos HaGadol. Even though they had Shabbos HaGadol drushes last week, that's because of just the convenience of the time and everything. But tomorrow is called Shabbos HaGadol. What does Shabbos HaGadol mean? It refers to the mitzvah of the Pesach offering. It's a reference to Pesach offering. Because in order to bring the Pesach offering in Mitzrayim, there was a major preparation which was needed before that. And that was to take the lamb of the Pesach, the lamb itself, and to separate it for 5 days. And to take it for 5 days and to tie it onto inside their houses, on their beds, and keep it this way and wait until the time they had to shecht it. This was the avoda, this was the service the Jewish people had to do. So I'll read to you what it says. The Torah, one of the sources of halacha, writes, the Shabbos before Pesach is called Shabbos of God, the great Shabbos. And the reason is because a miracle occurred during the Exodus from Egypt. Because on the 10th of Nisan, they took a sheep. As it says, on the 10th of this month, you shall take for yourselves a sheep into your homes. And the year that the Exodus took place was on a Thursday, as we know from the sources. And therefore, the 10th of Nisan, when they took that sheep, was the Shabbos before leaving Mitzrayim. Isn't that just an amazing idea that we know exactly the day of the week and the time of the day that we left Mitzrayim 3,500 years ago? We left on a Thursday. We left very early in the wee hours of the morning. And they took the sheep. They performed this avoda, this service of taking the sheep. They took it on the 10th, which is Shabbos that year. And therefore, the 10th of the month was Shabbos. And on that Shabbos, every Jew took a sheep as a paschal offering and tied it to their bedposts. And then the Egyptians asked them, well, what is this? Why do you have a sheep? Which is the Egyptian god. That was the Egyptian god. Why do you have this tied to your bed? They responded, to slaughter for a Pesach offering for Hashem, because they were told, the only way we're going to go out is only if we do this mitzvah of slaughtering the Pesach offering. That's what we're doing. We don't care what you have to say. And they got very upset, and they were going to slaughter their gods, but they couldn't say anything due to the miracle. And this is called Shabbos Agadol. The Mesiras Nefesh, the self-sacrifice that the Jews had in taking the God, the deity of the Egyptians, and they took it, tied it onto their beds, that in that zuchus, in that merit, that's why they left Mitzrayim. And they did this on the 10th of Nisan, which happened to be that year on Shabbos. Nothing happens to be. There's a significance of that as well. And the question really is also, practically for us, tomorrow is not the 10th of Nisan, right? Because this year Pesach is on Sunday. So if Pesach falls out on a Thursday, then the Shabbos Hagadol, the great Shabbos, when they actually did, would coincide exactly with how it was in Mitzrayim, right? But tomorrow is not the 10th of Nisan. Tomorrow is the 14th of Nisan. So the question is why don't we have some kind of ritual on the 10th of Nisan when they took the Paschal Lamb, if it was so important? Why do we always make it? Why do we always do or commemorate and think about this act of taking the Paschal Lamb? Oh, always on the Shabbos before Pesach. Do it on the date, on the calendar day, when it actually happened, the 10th of Nisan. Fine that in Mitzrayim it happened to be on a Shabbos. But that doesn't relate to us today, or maybe it does. So I'm not going to go through all the reasons. Commentaries talk about this. One of the reasons given by the Aruch HaShulchan is that it says because Shabbos and Pesach complement each other on the most fundamental level. Because Shabbos is the sign that Hashem made the world. And again, Pesach is the sign that he runs it and he has power and he has special chavivus and love for the Jewish people. It goes back to the God principles. Because the God principles which we are developing and refining for ourselves in Pesach, we do it every single week on Shabbos. That's what Shabbos is all about. Shabbos is all about a reinforcement of the God principles. And therefore, because Pesach is all about God principles, so therefore the rabbis saw it fit to commemorate and to think about the ultimate Mesiras Nefesh, the self-sacrifice that the Jewish people exhibited in Mitzrayim on the day also every single year, which always represents, every single week, represents the God principles, which is Shabbos. And that's why they do it. That's why we commemorate. We have a special reading tomorrow. And again, in many years, when it's not, when Shabbos is not Erev Pesach, there's a Shabbos Agadol Drasha, which is given. But this is the importance of Shabbos Agadol, the Mesiras Nefesh, the self-sacrifice of the Jewish people in bringing the Korban Pesach. But, you know, what this really points to is I was thinking about this morning, a very, very important idea. And that is, if you don't have this last step, think about this for a second. If you only have the first step of the three God principles, Hashem exists, He's involved in our lives, and there's no power like Him. If you only take that, if you just take that and live with that, it's very, very good. I don't want to minimize that. It's very, very good. You know, it's definitely an affirmation of the basic principles of Judaism. And it does, and the truth is, it gives you a very, very big ticket to the next world, right? Believing in the principles of Judaism is a very, very important thing. If a person wants to have a ticket to the next world, the most basic way to do that is understanding the principles of faith, understanding who Hashem is. But it doesn't end there. That's only just perhaps the back row seat in the next world, right? Only living with the God principles is not enough. Sorry to say. Right? Only living with the God principles is not enough. It's about putting into action. It's putting the God principles into action in our lives. If all we do is only believe in Hashem and to think about Hashem and to study the word of Hashem, and I want to give encouragement and chizuk and applaud everyone who's doing that and believes in this. And I really do give tremendous, you know, for myself, for all of us, all those who are believing ma'aminim, as we say, believers. It's unbelievable. It's phenomenal. Because in a world which is so antithetical and so against these ideas, it's a tremendous victory to be able to be attached to these principles. However, we know that there's mitzvahs as well. It doesn't end with this. The Paschal Lamb, the Pesach offering, is symbolic of putting these God principles into action, of now activating and performing the mitzvahs, of now moving along, taking these ideas and translating them into my actions, into my behavior, and into my Mesiras Nefesh, into my willingness to push aside conveniences, things which I want, desires, whatever it may be, putting those things aside to now moving and acting along and not just thinking Judaism, but doing Judaism. I have over here a little article which I found. this Rabbi Levi Avtson of Johannesburg just expresses it so beautifully with respect to the Paschal lamb, and we can certainly apply it in our lives too. Tying a sheep to the bed for 4 days was a process in letting go of all that was important until now, and standing up defiantly and declaring, we no longer take you seriously. What was God until now is food for tomorrow, for food to today. It was step one in taking the slavery out of the Jew. The first step to freedom is taking those beliefs that have enslaved us and slaughtering them. Each and every one of us holds on to ideas, emotions, and habits that are undermining our inner purity and potential. Whether it's an emotional blockage, if I show vulnerability, then I'll be considered weak. If it's an intellectual clog, I cannot listen to your point of view because of your, if you vote for the other party, then you're an idiot and not worthy of my time. Or habitual dysfunction. When I get angry, then I lose control and will say, whatever my immaturity spews forth, too bad on whoever gets in the way of my wrath. The Passover story teaches us, take the pagan god, your own reeking sheep, and tie it to your bed for 4 days. Live with it, breathe it, stare at it in the morning, noon and evening. See for what it is, a pathetic alternative to meaning and genuine spirituality. It's filling your inner home with noise and unpleasant smell. Yuck. Then after you've taken ownership over the hiccups of your potential and faced the ramifications of the unhealthy and untrue patterns of paradigms, feelings and behaviors, and I want to stress over here the behavioral part of it because that's what the point I was making before. Get up and slaughter that sheep. Roast it well and eat it. Relish the taste of dysfunctionality defeated. Take the roadblocks away and move on. And grow and move them off the growth road. This is the opportune time to choose to be bigger than our petty ego, to be smarter than the foolishness that makes us insecure, jealous, defensive, clogged up, and mediocre, and deficient, and paralyzed from not performing mitzvahs, to be freer from the slavery mindset that keeps us in Egypt year after year. This year, let us sacrifice our Passover sacrifice. Perform the avoda, the self-sacrifice of performing the mitzvahs which are incumbent upon me, and celebrate for what it's all about, freedom, and not just living, not just thinking Judaism, but living Judaism and putting it into practice as well. That's what it's about. So while we have the first three principles from Datzach, Adash, Be'ach, I'm not saying the last letter, they teach us about Judaism. They teach us what our beliefs are supposed to be. But the Machas Bechoros, introduced by our Mesiris Nefesh of the Paschal Lamb of doing Judaism, that's our ticket. That was our ticket to freedom. So this is the message of all the messages we have. But as we travel through the Seder, as we refine our sensitivity towards these great principles which Pesach is supposed to teach us, let it not stay in the brain. Let us not stay in the mind and just revel and relish in the ideas and enjoy the conversation, but let it also translate into action as well. Because after all, that's what the Jewish people did as well. They did Makkos Bechoros, they did the Korban Pesach. That was their putting into practice, and that's what merited them. We wouldn't be here without that Judaism being put into practice with the Korban Pesach. So I want to bring it back to my mother, Lev Shalom, because my mother, I don't know if I mentioned the name at the beginning, Atalia Yeres Bas Yukasil Yosef and the Shamash of Analia. But, I was thinking about this. I have a picture on my desk of my mother. And the last time I saw her was on a Purim 5 years ago when I went to my brother's house and for Purim, and not knowing what was going to transpire, obviously, because of COVID, suddenly exploded and took people's lives away. So when I was there, I took a picture of her. I have this picture on my desk. It's a beautiful picture. I should have shown it to you. But it's a picture of her sitting on she's sitting on a couch in my brother's living room. She was too frail to be able to go to the shul to hear the Megillah. So there was a neighbor of my brother who reads the Megillah. So he came over to my brother's house, and he read the whole Megillah for her. And you can see her in the picture, him in the picture. He's standing there reading the Megillah from a scroll. My mother's sitting there on the couch with the book in front of her, and she's following along. And I was, when I took the picture, I had no idea what this picture was going to represent for me in the future. But it really is almost like an iconic picture, because it shows her sitting there with a lot of devotion. Like, you can see her seriously looking at the Megillah, following along, devotingly and seriously. And it really captures her seriousness about the Judaism that she was practicing at this late stage in life, because maybe people don't know this, she became more observant. My father and my mother both became observant late in life. Late in life, they didn't grow up with this. They didn't grow up this way. It was only after I went to yeshiva. They were in their 60s and their 70s when they became Shomer Shabbos, right? They became Shomer Shabbos. And I say, you know, they are an example. It doesn't make a difference what you're sucking. Growing up in Liverpool, living in Liverpool, Suzanne will, it's not the most, Shomer Shabbos friendly kind of environment. You know, it's not like, you know, there's yeshivas and the little sorts of Shomer Shabbos over there. But to be able to go against the tide and to change their life around and to make the kitchen kosher and to keep Shabbos and to put on tefillin, they are representative of how a person can change. It doesn't make a difference what age we are. We can always change. We can always take on more. And Shemir Shabbos, of course, is the most important thing. There's no question. Shemir Shabbos is the most important change one has to take. And especially as we are going into Pesach right now, we are going to be, thinking about the great principles of Yiddishkeit on Shabbos. Shabbos, and so people should never think that Shabbos is beyond them. It's not beyond them. You take the first step, you move forward, you take, and that's what my mother really symbolized. So I want to, dedicate this class to her. Her and my father's also there. Their aliyah, their own growth in life, should be an inspiration for an aliyah for all of us. And then by extension, then it should rebound back upon them to be an aliyah for the neshamas and shamayim as well. And her neshamas particularly, as this is her yotzeit. So we should all be zocha to an aliyah in our ruchnias, in our behavior, in our actions as well, in our mitzvahs, in our shemiras and mitzvahs, and be a zuchus for her neshama, and have a zisim Pesach, have a not just a sweet Pesach, but a transformative Pesach along with it as well.